Let's get back to the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back as we continue to take a look at new stuff. New stuff. Things that make you go, with excitement rather than, with anger or frustration. We have enough of that every day. 1-888-463-6748 is our number on the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com. Heard in over 85 countries and 2,500 cities. More than two decades ago, a guy named Jimmy Carter asked Americans like you and me to consider solar power, energy from the sun that could heat homes, businesses, you name it. And his call to action was boosted by special introductory prices. Although not inexpensive, for solar panels you could put on your roof to harness the sun's rays. You remember that? Panels you could put in the backyard. You got a tax break. Congress was even convinced to provide income tax incentives for using solar energy. Pretty soon, solar energy began to fade from the scene, if you were called to, except for the loyal few, usually out west, who remained hooked on solar. Always helps when you live in a part of the country that gets lots of sun. Might not want to try that during a December, January, February in the Midwest. You might freeze your tush off. But solar may be making a comeback in different but compatible ways with the old concepts, and higher energy prices fuel the interest. David Mills is the chief scientific officer and founder of Ostra, a Palo Alto, California company which develops and deploys solar thermal power technology for utility companies. David, welcome to the Dave Baum Show. Nice to have you with us today.
Good morning, Dave. Nice to be here.
Would this work in the Midwest as well as places like California and Palo Alto and Arizona and places that get constant sunshine?
Yeah, that's the intention, but it's maybe broader than the picture in the past, because what we're talking about is producing central electricity on a large scale, but also having that electricity able to be delivered right up into that northeast corner that you're talking about.
David, what we had then, and I alluded to it in the introductory remarks, what we had then and why it didn't catch on, is there a plausible reason for that? Because I thought years ago, 25, 30 years ago, solar power made all the sense in the world. Then it was the panels and what you were going to put on your roof, not particularly aesthetically pleasing. How have things changed since then?
I don't think the fundamentals have changed, but inevitably we've had different levels of support for different industries, and it's historical that the bigger and more developed the industry, the more support it gets, rather than the opposite, as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had really quite a lot of opposition from existing industries defending their turf, but right now the climate issues have come to the fore. Public concern is very high, and we're seeing now the inevitable price rises in fossil fuel that come from mass demand from China and India are affecting the price. So their prices are coming up. Our prices are coming down through better research and development.
How would you describe, if you could paint some verbal pictures of what taking the energy from the sun and turning it into solar power looks like today, how would you describe it?
Well, the technology that we have isn't the old solar panels on houses concept. I mean, you can still do it that way, but we feel it's cheaper to go something closer to existing generation, which uses large turbines. So we're talking about large plants in arid areas throughout the country creating heat and steam, running that steam through turbines and producing electricity in a way that's very similar to, say, a nuclear plant or a coal plant might.
Okay.
Except the difference is here we have a clean boiler called the solar array.
Have these quietly been built in the western part of the United States over the years, these thermal plants?
Well, as a result of those Carter policies and also policies in California in the 80s, it was about 350 megawatts set up in California using parabolic trough technology. And those are still there. They have run very, very reliably. They call it, 90%, 99% reliability for now 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a proven concept, unlike some concepts. I wouldn't call carbon sequestration proven, for example. And so we have a good option there because the technology has moved on. Even though it wasn't supported too well, there was sort of a core of devotees who worked on all through those years of starvation, I guess we could call it, and I guess the old gladiators. But they've come true. There are a variety of exciting new technologies all coming out now as a result of that basic research and development that was done, and it's really flourishing here in California.
Well, looking back at the history, looking back in the early 80s to the present time, as these plants were being built in California and other places out west and got a little bit more sophisticated, were they as successful as you thought they would be back then?
They're more successful. I mean, when you start a new technology, I guess nuclear power is a good example of this, you expect all sorts of problems. But with those plants that went into California, they were built for the first time, first large solar plants running turbines ever built, and they all worked.
Mm-hmm.
They all worked, and they're all still there. And actually, the utilities in California love them, because when the big air conditioning peaks come on in midsummer, those plants are really chugging.
And when the competition, for example, natural gas, I would assume natural gas and other types of fossil fuel, when their prices keep going up as they are now, you're sitting in the driver's seat, aren't you?
Well, that's right. People are starting to get it now. The price of natural gas has been rising due to world demand, and our prices have been coming down. So the transition is we're actually passing through that transition of the same price as natural gas now. Some technologies are more than that, but the more aggressive, newer technologies are just about at the natural gas level right now and heading for coal.
Well, I would also assume that states that are progressive to me, like California and maybe a few others out west, are going to mandate through legislation renewable energy, concepts, yeah, which would include solar. In other words, you might not find that back east yet, but I would guess that in places like California, probably legislation has been or will be introduced talking about mandating of renewable energy.
Well, certainly that is true in California and several other states, quite a lot of states, in fact, where a mandatory amount of renewable energy by, say, 2020 or 2030 is expected by the utilities, and here it's quite aggressive. I think it's around about one third by 2020. But it can go further than that. I just recently attended a talk by the Arizona Public Utility, and they have recently announced a 280 megawatt solar plant with 6-hour storage. And they went through all of the options and found that this particular technology fitted their requirements the best of any technology, bar none. And I'm talking about in general solar, mm-hmm, with storage. And they said from now on, when we go out to tender, we're going to demand that renewable energy have storage. And that actually leaves a lot of that leaves wind and PV in a difficult situation, for example.
Here's a $1 million question to me. I've never been able to figure out why, and this is totally irrelevant to the matter of solar energy, but why, I'll use it as an analogy, why this country hasn't been smart enough to find ways to take water from places that have plenty to places that are dry because they haven't had any rain. If I move that analogy over to solar energy, can this power be shipped to places that don't have that much sun?
It certainly can, and not only that, the match between the generation of solar energy or solar electricity in the Southwest matches the grid load for the entire United States very, very well. We've done a paper on that recently and showing that you could not only run the existing generation almost completely from solar, because it peaks in the same way. It peaks in summer. The national grid peaks in summer due to air conditioning demand.
In other words, for a guy like me who doesn't have a scientific mind, what you're saying is that energy that is produced, for example, in Palo Alto, parts of California and Arizona, can be transshipped back east and to the Midwest, places where in the fall and winter we don't get much sun.
Yeah, that's right. There's already a technology that does that. It's called HVDC, or it's high voltage DC transmission. It's actually used already. You find big DC lines coming, for example, down from Canada in the hydroelectric facilities in British Columbia and coming down to L.A., feeding L.A. during the winter. So this technology can go coast to coast with an energy loss of about 10%. So we would have to pay 10% more in New York for California electricity than in California.
David Mills is our guest, part of a Palo Alto company called Osra, which develops and deploys solar thermal power technology for utility companies. The politics of solar in Washington these days. I can remember when it was real exciting back during the Carter days, as I mentioned, but what is the politics, from your vantage point, of solar in Washington today?
Well, it's a pretty lobbied area. I guess from the point of the existing technologies like coal and oil, we are a very disruptive technology, and we do threaten their markets. And so they spend a lot of money lobbying Congress to try to oppose anything which will assist the development of the industry. For example, the income tax credit, which is a temporary measure to get the industry up and moving, it's about 30% income tax credit, is constantly fought from the other end. And we recently lost that in the energy bill by one vote in Congress.
How do you go about convincing, and obviously you don't have to convince legislators in your neck of the woods about the viability of solar power, but how do you go about convincing legislators from other parts of the country that this is the future, and not just one of the choices, but this is probably one of the key choices of the future? How do you do that?
It's quite difficult. I mean, essentially what we're trying to do is use logic, but it isn't a very logical matrix, if you can...
You're talking about Washington, D.C.
That's right.
Okay, logic, yeah.
We have a full line of experts who are accessible, like perhaps Steve Schneider over here, who's worked on the IPCC and is a great climatologist, and can tell you that we have to move extremely quickly. So there's a desperate need for us to act quickly in order that we don't go into very uncomfortable situations with regard to the climate. And then you can go to various experts showing that we can take this kind of technology and expand it very, very quickly. It's called scaling up, but we have a shorter construction cycle, if you will, than other technologies like nuclear and coal.
So you really have to convince politicians and others what's in it for them if solar becomes a bigger part of the plan, right? What's in it for them?
And that's one of the problems with any new technology, that I guess there are winners and losers. If you look at some industries, they'll do extremely well. Other industries will fade away. Present jobs will fade away. All kinds of new jobs will be created. In net, we'll create far more jobs than they're lost, but those will be in different places. And so people get defensive in those places that might lose jobs. It's a hard one. I don't think it's easy, but the planet calls. The safety of the planet is at issue here.
So maybe, like so many other things, the kernel of the idea has to grow out west and eventually move itself back east, huh?
I think so. I think that's already there in the west. We're starting to get a whole state saying, you know, this has got to be the way to go. But and a good part of the country can participate in this. It's not as if it's, you know, a tiny area around Arizona. You know, large areas of Texas or Colorado or Utah or practically the whole West can participate in the generation and still be very, very economical. And it's wrong to think that other parts can't participate. A grid that such as we're talking about can accept, if we have storage on the grid, we can accept other things like Midwest wind and also we can accommodate hydroelectricity capacity where possible. So I think there's quite a lot of energy generation across the country that can participate in a future grid like this.
David Mills, I want to thank you very much for your time and input on the matter of solar energy, where you see it out west and where it could be in the years down the road. Thank you for joining us on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure. Bye.
David Mills, Chief Scientific Officer for a Palo Alto, California company, Solar Thermal Power. That plus the 100-mile-per-gallon car makes you think a little bit more positively about tomorrow, doesn't it, folks? Makes me, and I'm just, you know, I usually walk in with that cynical attitude. Show me, and I didn't grow up in Missouri. According to the American Association of Retired Persons Bulletin, for two decades, the two parties and government have been deadlocked by what is called the, quote, rampant partisanship that has paralyzed Washington, close quotes. Here are some of the consequences, my friends. Americans without health insurance, 47 million and climbing. Price tag for repairing roads and bridges has reached $1.6 trillion. Social Security plus Medicare face red ink within a decade. A sensible and no-nonsense immigration bill went nowhere. No changes in education's No Child Left Behind. Nothing of significance to reduce greenhouse emissions. A ferocious power struggle between conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats. Republicans under Gingrich and DeLay took partisan politics to a new low. Democrats under Pelosi haven't learned a damn thing about what American people want. We want a government that works, and I didn't say right wing or left wing. All we've had through Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush Jr. is a constant roadblock by segments of both parties that are more interested in their personal and party gains than what's in it for all Americans. Listen very carefully to these candidates who would be president and decide which one is tough enough to successfully jawbone social and fiscal issues that our so-called elected leaders in the House and Senate have ignored for more than 20 years. The key is listen very carefully. We've reached the end of Talk Zone, the Dave Baum Show today. Appreciate it. Thanks to producer Randy Myers for doing a great job. Our engineer, as always, Dave Olson. Thank you for listening. I'm Dave Baum. Till the next time, Mama get the coffee ready. The kid's on his way.
You've been listening to The Dave Baum Show with today's compelling talk radio. Be sure to join Dave again for more fascinating and knowledgeable guests, stimulating conversation, and your phone calls on the Talk Zone phone lines. The Dave Baum Show, right here on TalkZone.com.